Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Tony Smith and John Osher.
All right, Mike Dempsey taking the day off on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Here on Jaguars Today, John Osher sitting down with me, shaking his head. What's the head
the
shake?
Day off. I mean, come on.
You know.
Where are we at?
It's the bye week, man.
It would have been fine if there had been hurricane association. That's fine. Now I know what we're dealing with.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Right. Now, it was something like midway through the week of the London trip, Mike was sitting here with me. He's like,
he started mumbling, didn't he?
He's like, you know what? I think I'm going to take that Monday off.
And the idea got right. Good to him, and he gained momentum.
Which is fine.
I've been there.
I don't mind it at all, as I'm joined by John Osher today on the program. Again, on Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on the show. I know, for me, I was just saying, I basically had to deal with nothing when it came to the storm. I was at my parents' house. We never even lost power. I just watched playoff baseball.
Sure.
Basically on Friday, especially once I figured out that the storm was going to stay off the coast, and I'm 20 miles inland, and it really wasn't going to be much of a threat to me except for some wind gusts where I was, and hoping at that point that I wasn't going to lose power. That was basically the extent of my concern. And I know for a lot of people, there was a lot more than that going on.
Sure.
So I hope people were okay.
We were lucky. We had some fence blowout, and we lost power for about a day. But in our area, at least, JEA, I thought, did a remarkable job getting it back. We had a small leak in our roof, but fortunately our roofer is Jaguars Today sponsor, Bob Roberts.
Yes.
So I feel confident that it's going to get worked out quickly.
Oh, it will get worked out quickly.
They're great.
Absolutely no doubt about it. And yeah, for anyone who is dealing with that kind of thing, you can contact Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. Let's see, at 287-7756. Remember to tell him that Dempsey sent you. So if you got any...
I might even get a little bump for that one. Huh?
So if you had any water stains on the ceilings, walls, anything like that, they can come out and inspect the roof for missing or loose shingles after the storm. Leaks for residential or commercial, just call Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. They have a team of public insurance adjusters to assist with storm damage.
That was pro radio by me, wasn't it?
It was. License number CCC056797. So, yeah, I mean, it's a Bob Roberts kind of week.
It really is.
The First Coast, with a lot of people dealing with whatever damage they had. I know a bunch of downed trees in my area. Fortunately, none of them were on top of me. Or my friends, at least, didn't have to deal directly with any of that. But I know a lot of people did.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, for everybody who got off unscathed, there are people dealing with significant headaches and probably worse today. So I hope the Monday is going well for as many people as possible.
No doubt about it.
And interestingly enough, the hurricane goes through, and we get our power back about 7 o'clock. About 4 o'clock, I get a call from my son, who's going to college in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, "Hey, Dad." I said, "Yeah, Jake, what's up?" Well, campus is okay, but Fayetteville's pretty much underwater. And I was thinking, okay, sort of underwater.
Mm-hmm.
So I get back home, and we haven't really been able to watch the news. And usually our thoughts are always, you know, son, how's he doing? But we've been kind of preoccupied with the hurricane.
Sure.
And we get home, and sure enough, the town where he is legitimately underwater. So he's been without power for 2 days. It might be off until like Saturday, he's hearing. So ironically, we spent the whole week sort of preparing for this hurricane, thinking it wasn't going to hit up there. And then all of a sudden, he's dealing with a lot more than we are. So that's fatherhood at best.
No doubt about it. So anyone who was affected, obviously, our thoughts are with you, and hopefully everything gets sorted out for you quickly here over the course of the next couple days. I know most of Jacksonville seems to be back under power. It was kind of weird. Like I said, in my area, it was like it didn't happen by the time we got to Saturday afternoon.
And I think we'd have been okay, except we had a tree go down 2 or 3 blocks from where we were. And I was out Saturday night and saw him working on the tree, and then as soon as they were gone, the power restored. So I guess it was as arbitrary as that. One line down could cause whole neighborhoods, and once it got fixed, it was fixed. So that's electricity for you, Mike.
It is. I know. When I left my house on Saturday afternoon to try to go find something to eat, because the power did go off in our fridge, so we didn't have much in the fridge, and I didn't feel
like
you
were being inconvenient.
Yeah, I didn't feel like I wanted to eat soup.
Right.
You know, like I'm prepared to eat soup if I need to, but I didn't have to eat soup, so I was going out to find something else to eat. and you could almost feel the relief from the trees.
Yeah.
That it was just a stiff kind of breeze
yeah.
by the time we got to that afternoon. I mean, even the ones that stood through it, you could kind of almost sure. sense their agony over the course
of
those
wild.
2 days.
And you did get an appreciation for, I think, how overall fortunate the city was and just how devastating they can be when they really hit. Because this one didn't even really hit. And it was still absolutely frightening to watch the footage from the beach. And you could imagine what it would have been on a direct hit. It's just mind-blowing.
Sure, sure. I mean, it was a big storm.
Sure.
And we all got very fortunate. Even the beaches, mm-hmm. in the end, they got fortunate with it staying offshore
sure,
as much
compared,
as they did.
Right.
I mean, they withstood a lot of damage, but it could have been so yeah. much worse if that thing had decided to just bump a little bit west, and instead it stayed out there in the ocean, and unfortunately South Carolina, North Carolina
right.
Wound up taking the brunt of it as far as a landfalling hurricane, so we dodge it a little bit, but still people dealing with some damage, so hopefully everyone out there is okay. We're going to get back to football with it being a game week again for the Jags, and they got 12 more of them now.
Sure.
Whether they want them or not, there's 12 more of them coming up for this Jaguars team.
Well, and it's all there in front of them. I mean, it's they should probably be in better situation. They could easily be 2-2, 3-1. But the good news is they're not 0-4, and they're in it. The Texans are within, what, a game and a half? Everything's within a game and a half
mm-hmm.
in the South. You're 1-0 in the division, and you've got two games remaining with the division leaders. I don't know right now how good or bad the Jaguars are. I mean, I think they've looked like they've got some potential to put things together, and they've looked bad at times. They think they have a chance to be pretty good still. If they are, if they're right, then there's no reason they can't make something of this season. You know, if they're wrong, then they're wrong, and it's going to be a bad year. But it's not like you're in a division where you have a 3-1 team and you're 0-4 and you're looking at three games and you've lost to them already. It's still right there.
No, it is. It's all in front of them, really, for everybody in the South, which
yep.
is an interesting spot to be in. It feels like 2015 all over again when it comes to covering this team and this division. That brings us to the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day today. Obviously, the Jags 1-3 to this point in the season. We kind of like to look at the season in quarters. So predict the Jags record over the next four games, and who do you think they'll beat? Obviously, at Chicago this week, home against Oakland next week, at Tennessee and at Kansas City to figure out this second quarter of the season going into the midway point for this Jaguars team. So what kind of record do you think they'll have in those four games, and who of those four, if anyone, do you think they will get the win against? We'll get to some of your answers a little bit later on. Believe it or not, John, not a whole lot of positivity in answer to that question from Jaguars fans, at least early on with the responses. We'll get to some of our own thoughts on that a little bit later. Want to take a look at where the Jags are through four games of the season. You mentioned there are reasons maybe to believe a little bit in this football team. We'll talk about some of those reasons offensively and especially defensively for them through 1 month of the season. Also want to get into this Bears game this weekend and just how big a deal is it for this Jaguars team going through the rest of the 2016 season and what it could potentially set up for them. Mike Dempsey out for the day. Fat Tony here with you. John Osher alongside the Jaguars.com. How do we? Senior writer? Is that
senior
the
writer.
Official term?
Absolutely.
The senior writer for Jaguars.com, John Osher, joining us for the show today as we get things kicked off on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
This is the quarterback here, Jacksonville Jaguars, Blake Bortles, and you are listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey taking the day off. He'll be back with us tomorrow as we check no tape. With Jeff Lockerman, no game to go back and check the tape on. John Osher alongside
I'll bet
today.
Jeff will have some hurricane stories for you.
I bet he will.
He can probably break that down a little bit.
I wonder if he went up to his property. He usually does during the bye week.
Maybe not this week.
Yeah.
He's married now. It's a hard sell to go away during the hurricane. That's a tough
is.
One.
Yeah. Just a little bit more difficult. A Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on the show today. They are located at 1233 Lane Avenue South. You can give them a call at 693-0777. Trade your gold for guns over there. And we heard Blake Bortles a moment ago coming back in.
Perfect.
And that's a good way to get things started when looking at the first four games of the season. John, something we talked about over the course of the last couple weeks especially, I thought San Diego and Baltimore were as bad as Blake has been in back-to-back games since he got here to Jacksonville. Now, he played better against Indianapolis, mm-hmm. and obviously well enough for the Jaguars to find a way to win that football game. I think if they're going to take advantage of the opportunity that is available to him in the AFC South, he has to be so much better than he was even against Indianapolis, because there are a lot better teams on the schedule than Indianapolis that they're going to need to beat if they're eventually going to be a playoff team.
Yeah, I think he can be what he was against Indianapolis, and they'd be okay. And what I mean by that is he played well enough against Indianapolis that they were ahead, what, 23-6?
At one point, yeah.
And I think he deserves a little more credit than we've given him for what he did against Indianapolis. And when I say that, it felt in weeks two and three coming out of that like very much a crisis point. He was taking a lot more heat, a lot more pressure, a lot more scrutiny on his body line, everything. He was having his first experience of you're the quarterback in the NFL, and guess what, kid? It's all about you, whether it's really all about you or not.
And it's the high expectations on the football team.
Everything was on him.
Right.
And that's the way it is. But he came out and in a game, I thought played smart, played turnover free, looked better in the pocket, was decisive when he ran, figured out a way. You know, he wasn't perfect. He wasn't Tom Brady throwing for 400 yards, but he went without turnovers. He showed he could do that. I thought he played with a lot of calm, a lot of poise. Not every quarterback in the NFL is going to light it up for 400 yards and four touchdowns every week. If he can play the way he did against Indy, play smart, be decisive when he runs, make good decisions, then, yeah, I think that's good enough for this team to be in games. It really wasn't on him that the Colts got, what, three touchdowns in the last quarter and a half of the game.
Mm-hmm.
He got the lead, and then he made a big play at the end. So I think he can play better than he did against Indy, but I think that needs to be the way he plays in terms of not making the mistakes and not getting his team in trouble. I think if he plays that way, then this team can win games.
I said,
because he's good enough to make big plays, sure, on top of that is my point.
And I said after the San Diego game, when they were 0-2 and you could really feel the bottom collapse on the fan base basically out there, that this felt to me like a roster that was going to go 6-10. Like it just feels like a team, mm-hmm, that is good enough from a talent perspective that they're going to find a way to probably win 5 or 6 football games in the 2016 season, that something has to happen to push them to be an 8-8, 9-7 football team. And whether that's, you believe that's the coaching is getting in the way, or if it was the play of Blake Bortles, whatever it was, combination of all that stuff is generally how it works in the NFL. Mm-hmm. But whatever it was, if they weren't a team that won 8 games, then it felt like to me something got in the way of them winning those 8 games. So I watched that game against Indianapolis. My read on Blake was a little bit different than yours. He protected the football, and that's got to be number one for him. Mm-hmm. They're generally good in games where he doesn't turn the ball over. I mentioned the stat last week. They're 5-3 when he doesn't throw a pick in a game. Which
it would probably be 3-1 this year without turnovers.
It probably would.
So,
and they're 5-3 when he doesn't. That includes the Indianapolis game on the road last year where they missed 2 game-winning field goals, and when he threw 5 touchdowns against Tennessee. And the defense just couldn't find a way to slow down that Titans offense. So they certainly could be 7-1 in those games where Blake doesn't turn the ball over. But they're a good football team when he doesn't. It felt to me watching the game against Indianapolis that it was less about being decisive to run the ball. He was indecisive about what he saw, so he ran. And I'm okay with that if it leads to...
That's where he is right now.
Right. If it leads to he sees what he should see and makes the big plays.
I think that's got to eventually come. But right now, running because you don't see it, if that's what it was, is not ideal. But it's sure better than sort of dancing around and being doubly indecisive if you don't see what's going on downfield.
Sure.
And I thought that's where the improvement came, is they basically put him in situations where, hey, if you don't see it, then go. If you do see it, then throw. And that's not the ideal way to play quarterback in this league, but is it a way where they can have more success than they had in the first 3 games until he's better at that? Then, yeah. And it's hard to know what he saw. We're interpreting that.
Yeah.
But
that was my feeling of watching the game.
And that's fair. But I think it was still better. You still felt like he was at least dictating things a little more by doing it that way. I prefer a guy who dictates from the pocket. I've always said that. That's the ideal in the NFL. Right now, he's not that guy yet. He's shown signs of being that guy. He's not that guy yet. Until he is that guy, then maybe you need dictate with your legs a little bit, and until the dictating with the arm from the pocket comes along.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the first three games compared to the Indianapolis game at least, it's pretty obvious what defense they're doing to the Jacksonville right. Jaguars at this point. They watched them in 2015. When this offense had big success, it was because Blake was basically letting Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns try to go up and make plays down the field.
Right.
And it was single coverage where he was just betting on his guys to go make the play, and they did.
Right.
More often than not, they did.
If I was coordinating against this, I would take that away. And
that's what they've done. That's essentially what they've done, is basically say, all right, we're not going to let you just throw the ball up one-on-one to these guys to right. make those big chunk plays. You're going to have to figure out some other way to do it. That's not to say there hasn't been opportunities that they've just missed mm-hmm. for some of those big plays against Indianapolis. There were a couple there in the second half of the game. One of them, I mean, it was a foot off from Allen Robinson being right. off to the races down that sideline. The pass interference where he came back was another opportunity potentially to make that kind of play downfield. So there's
one
still
to Marquise out here.
I
mean, yeah, so good.
It's just they haven't taken advantage of him to this point. And what has to happen, I think, to loosen it up enough for them to get those opportunities and for those to grow again is basically it feels like defenses are daring Blake Bortles to be accurate in kind of that mid-range.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point in the season, he hasn't been able to.
Right.
And if he isn't able to very soon, then, again, those big plays aren't going to be there. And for
right.
fans screaming for why aren't they throwing it downfield, defenses are going to take that away until you give
right.
them a reason not to.
It's very, I got a lot of emails after the Colts game of, well, why aren't they more aggressive on offense when they have the lead? They run into the line, et cetera, et cetera. As you said, if they're taken deep away and they're not consistently effective on intermediate, then I'm not sure that you want to say, okay, we're going to win this game by throwing 80% of the time in the second half. I don't know that that's a sound strategy. So you're trying to figure out a way that you can win with what you have going on right now. I definitely think the running game is going to be key in the second half of the season. They need to be a lot closer to what they were in Indy, and maybe that means having Blake roll once or twice to get that loosened up. That will create the big plays. Certainly Gus last week when he talked, I don't think it's any secret that that's going to be a priority. They feel like they need to run closer to what they did against Indy than they did in the first three games. We'll see if that happens. They have not been a team in the last 20 games, 5 months of football that's been able to do that consistently.
No.
Better against Indy. We'll see if it's better going forward.
No, it's certainly a big question going forward, is this team trying to figure out how they're
right.
going to be able to run the ball. It's a big question for them through the last 12 games of the season. We'll see if they can get that figured out starting against Chicago. We'll talk about that in a moment. First, want to get to our first caller of the week as we get ready for the Bears. Jerome on the west side wants to make a comment on the state of this Jaguars team. What's up, Jerome?
Hey, how y'all doing this morning?
Good.
Good. I don't really know what to think about the Jaguars right now. I feel like they underachieved this year by far, in that they basically won that Colts game on talent alone. I mean, they were just probably just one drive away from losing that game, even though Bortles probably played a good game. We almost lost that game, and it was out of his hands. And then we could have been looking at 0-4. Bortles still had a good game, and yet we still trying to find a way to win. And for us to keep trying to learn how to win and win and win, every year we're trying to learn the same thing, and it's just getting kind of old. But I, at the same time, I don't really know what to expect, because I look around the league and I see what the Colts are doing to these other teams, and yet we barely walked away from that victory. And I'm kind of like worried about the rest of the year, because I don't really know what to expect out of these boys. I really don't know, whether it's coaching or players. I don't know. I can't even pinpoint it no more. I just don't know where to start at.
All right, Jerome, appreciate the call.
Jerome's having a tough day.
He sounds like he is. Look, I think I thought about this a little bit yesterday. the idea of it's a young team that's having to learn how to win. I don't think it's invalid to bring that up. I think it clearly is mm-hmm. a young team that is still trying to learn how to win. I think it's really frustrating that in year four of a coach's regime, we have to have the conversation about it being a young team that's still trying to learn how to win. And from that perspective, I totally get the fans' frustration, mm-hmm. and I am right there with you when it comes to that. That doesn't mean that makes it any less valid to point it out at this point, because this is a young football yeah. team that's trying to figure out how to win.
Well, usually, you know, okay, how do you quantify learning how to win? Well, usually learning how to win is, can you rush the passer when you have a lead? That's a win-clinching thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is your quarterback capable of big plays at the end of the game in clutch situations? I think Bortles has shown that, maybe not as consistently as you'd like. And then can you run at the end of games when you have a lead to clinch things away? A lot of times, that is sort of a better way to quantify learning how to win. I thought in years past it's been tough for them to learn how to win because they haven't had leads, but they did show the other day they're starting to get enough pass rush ability to pressure on defense where that element of, quote, learning how to win could be coming along. Again, so much of this, you hate to pile everything on the quarterback, but it's about the quarterback. He took a huge step last year from year one to year two, statistically. But we talked all offseason that there were things he still had to do in terms of efficiency, in terms of third down conversion, in terms of seeing things. It was a tougher step from year two to year three. A lot of learning how to win becomes, is the quarterback ready to be a guy who can lift you on his shoulders and win certain games? He definitely has a clutch gene. Will he become the guy who can really carry it in those three or four games of the season that make the difference between 6-10 and 10-6? That's what we don't know about the guy yet. And
sure.
He's got an element of it. Can he put it all together? That's, I think, what he is trying to do this season. I think that's what the storyline of this season is.
And unfortunately, if you're looking at that handful of five or six games where that happens, it feels like for the Jags, two of them already have. Maybe three if you want to include the Indianapolis game, and they're kind of 1-2 in those types
of
games.
I'd say probably, three. I mean, and Green Bay, the one that really stands out, obviously, is
Baltimore.
Is Baltimore.
Yeah.
That was the one that was there for the taking, everything. And it was just, to me, that was as disastrous a game in a lot of ways as San Diego, because it was there for you. Everything was there, and you had the ball on the opposite side of the 50 in field goal range three times and got 3 points. That's a tough one to swallow, and it'll probably haunt them at some point this season. But the next three games,
yep.
You've got four. I think they need to go 3-1, get back to even, and see how it goes from there. They're capable of doing that if they can continue to rush the passer and if the quarterback plays sans turnovers.
And one of the three things you talked about there was being able to run the ball when you want to run the ball, not something the Jaguars have really done effectively in the past three-plus seasons. So we'll talk about whether or not we believe the pieces are in place for them to potentially be able to do that mm-hmm. Going forward inside this 2016 season, because I agree with you. I think it's a big key for this offense going forward. It's trying to figure out some way, if they need to manufacture a running game out of this
offense. That's a little scary because it's something they haven't done.
No,
but again, when we talk about the Colts game, there were a few things in that if it can become their identity, then they've got a chance to put something together. They ran. They looked very good pressuring the passer. They did some things like that. So you wonder, okay, is that what they can be? I'm not saying the Colts are a great team this year, but they're 2-3, and there's a lot of they're right in the mix, and there's going to be a lot of teams like that. Most games are decided late. Don't worry about that. Can those signs we saw become what this team is? That'll be what's interesting to me the next month of the season.
No doubt about it. He's John Osher. I'm Fat Tony. Mike Dempsey taking the Monday off. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. We'll get into that offensive line a little bit. Again, going to get shuffled around with the injury to Luke Jokel and him being placed on injured reserve last week. So what is it going to look like going forward for this Jacksonville Jaguars group? And how have they played to this point in 2016? We'll talk about that when we return on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
The Jaguars obviously had the weekend off, and next up they visit the Chicago Bears. Brian Hoyer nearly led a two-minute comeback last night against the Indianapolis Colts, but could not convert on fourth down. The Colts beat the Bears 29-23. The Colts improved to 2-3, while the Bears fall to 1-4. One of the bright spots for the Bears to keep an eye on for this week is rookie running back Jordan Howard. He had 163 yards of total offense, 118 on the ground against the Colts, including a touchdown. Jaguars Monday on the air tonight, 6 to 8 p.m. tonight on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. And this has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Tyler Devitt.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
A Wild West Guns and Gold Monday, Fat Tony, John Osher here with you on a Monday edition of Jaguars Today. Also want to remind you, one of the great sponsors here on Jaguars Today, Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. I know you had need. Give them a call over the course of the weekend, John.
Oh, I have need.
Yeah.
I'm actively need. No, they're good people. And call them this morning. I'm sure they'll be getting back to me soon.
Yeah, so if you are out there, if you had any storm damage, you can look for water stains on the ceilings and walls of your home. If you're dealing with any of that, they can come out and inspect the roof for missing or loose shingles for you as well, just to see if your roof is stable after the storm rolls through. Leaks for residential and commercial, call First Coast Roofing. They have a team of public insurance adjusters to assist with any storm damage you may have. Just give them a call at 904-287-7756. Again, that's 904-287-7756. Be sure to tell them Dempsey, Fat Tony, John Osher sent you out there. To the good people there at Bob Roberts First Coast Roofing, license number CCC056797, as I know a lot of people probably in need of that.
Yeah, I'll clarify here. I'm very much in a first world problems situation here. I've got a tiny leak where I've got a little bit of a water stain. It's not gushing through the house. So I don't want to overstate
I didn't think the roof collapsed. I kind of figured if the roof collapsed,
right,
John,
I'm doing okay.
You probably wouldn't be in here today. You'd probably have to be home taking care of any really serious problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I don't want to overstate it. I'm a little dramatic, but I just want to clarify for truth's sake. I've got a blue bucket underneath it, and it's got about an inch of water in it for the whole weekend. So I'm okay.
You're doing all right.
We made it through, Tony.
It doesn't mean you don't need the good people over there at
That's
Bob
right.
Roberts, though. So give them a call again at 904-287-7756. We were talking about the offense and a lot about Blake Bortles there a moment ago. Now, the offensive line, it was a big question mark going into the offseason. We all felt like kind of from center to right tackle that it was probably going to take care of itself with Linder making that transition inside, Can and Parnell there on the right side. It feels like Parnell has been just okay.
You're shaking your hands. That's probably fair.
Yeah, just kind of okay. Linder has been great. Now, he missed the one game, obviously, but he's been great at the center spot, and A.J. Can's been okay as well.
And Linder was a reason that they were able to run block, you know, against Indy. He's a big factor on the offensive line. The more he can be healthy, he's a very smart player, very good, and will get extraordinarily better, I think, at line calls as he gets more used to doing it. I think overall, pass blocking, I think the offensive line has taken a big step up from years past. I think some of the sacks early were Bortles not feeling the pressure quite right. And I'm not remotely saying that he has fear in the pocket, none of that, but just feeling it a little bit. He has said a couple of times it needs to do a better job of getting rid of the ball and protecting the down and distance situations, if you will. So I think the offensive line has pass blocked well enough to be an effective passing offense. Early it didn't run block very well, got better against Indy from the start of the game. I've had people saying, well, you saw how much better they were when Luke Jokel went out. Well, they were run blocking pretty well when Jokel was in, but it looked better. So can they build on that? In years past at this point in the season, you looked at the offensive line and you really wondered, was there going to be any hope for it at all during the season?
Sure.
You don't get that feeling this year. I don't get a feeling that there are no answers, that they can't win behind this offensive line. I think it's played okay. It even showed signs early in the season against San Diego and against Green Bay. There were moments of run blocking. The stats didn't hold up against San Diego, but I think they ran, I want to say, close to 4 yards a carry against San Diego, and they had to get away from it because they were so far down. So it was really bad against Baltimore. It was not good against Green Bay. Didn't have a chance against San Diego, and was really good, I thought, against the Colts. So it's not like there's no hope for this to be a balanced offense with a lot of it coming from the line. And I think the Jokel absence doesn't help, but losing your left guard shouldn't be a killer in this league.
Shouldn't be.
Right.
And we'll see how they deal with that injury. It's something that we talked about throughout the offseason with the plan they put in place to deal with the offensive line, with Linder shifting over, Jokel's coming inside to play that left guard spot, bringing in Beecham and, hoping that he's going to be healthy enough to go by the time the regular season came around. Well, he was.
Right.
He missed the game because of the concussion, but that has nothing to do with what's going on with that knee or the recovery from the ACL. Now Jokel's out.
And you would
out.
Think would get better as time goes on.
Sure.
On that knee.
No
and
doubt.
And it's played pretty well.
Yeah, he has. And that was the plan, right? And I think with Jokel out now, obviously the plan changes.
Sure.
And they have to figure something else out. I think there's this tendency among fans, it feels like sometimes, that, well, they didn't build enough depth on the offensive line. I think offensive line depth is the most difficult thing to have in the National Football League right now, because most of the 32 NFL teams don't even have five guys that are NFL caliber guys playing right now.
Right.
I mean, it's a really difficult proposition to say that we're going to have eight or nine guys that are, NFL quality offensive linemen. I think they have guys that are good enough to get
them through.
And by difficult
proposition, you mean that it doesn't exist.
Right. I think it's the worst group in the NFL is offensive line play right now. I think it's bad pretty much league-wide. There are teams that have really good offensive lines.
Right.
I think Tennessee, you're looking at them. The difference for them this year, I think, really is that offensive line. It's been really, really good to this point and given them an opportunity to win all the games that they've played. You see what's happening in Dallas when they build that offensive line. Made the right decisions, and they are dominant up front there in Dallas. But that's kind of the end of the list of teams that are that kind of good. And there's a lot of teams that you look at it week to week and go, ooh.
Right.
I mean, we're talking playoff teams that are not going to be good on the offensive line.
And you can say, well, you should have built more depth. Where? I mean, where were you going to go get it? I've had a lot of people, many emails say, well, they should have drafted offensive line. That was their big mistake. Well, did you not want to draft Jalen Ramsey?
Right.
Do you like having Miles Jack on the team?
I do.
Do you like having Yannick Ngakoue?
That seems like it's probably going to work out.
Do you think Sheldon Day is going to be a big part of your core going forward?
Probably.
So I at that point, now you're talking about the fifth round. Now, realistically, I don't know that a fifth round lineman is going to come in and help you right now. So on that front, it's very hard. Takes time to build a deep offensive line. Even when you do it, if you build the depth, you're going to lose the depth. So right now they've got to go with what they've got. Ideally, you'd have depth at every position, but that really doesn't happen in the salary cap era.
No, it really doesn't.
You have to patch.
And look, I think Dallas obviously made it a point to draft offensive line and at times got criticized when they made those picks, instead of going with more glamorous picks. But that was a football team that
they had
Tony Romo and had Dez Bryant and had Jason Witten. Like, they had things at the skill positions that they felt like they could rely on. Now, they obviously drafted Ezekiel Elliott this year.
It would have been an awfully tough ask the last two off seasons, considering the needs on this team, to have drafted heavy in the first four rounds on the offensive line to try to build up that reservoir of talent. I mean, part of the issue is when you're building from scratch, you have to draft and sign 22, 24 spots and start building depth. Well, if you're building depth, now you're talking about adding in a four-year period 30 good frontline football players.
Mm-hmm.
It's a task.
No doubt about it. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't expectations for this offensive line to be as good or better than they've been to this point in 2016. There's still obviously the kind of engine to allow the offense to get going. So, look, there's still expectation on these guys to go out and be professionals. And, look, Parnell needs to be better.
Yep.
I think A.J. Cann's been kind of up and down to this point this year. Linder's obviously been good. Now there's a big question mark about what they're going to do at left guard. And I think Beecham's been pretty good at the left tackle spot. So there are still expectations that they need to probably be better than they've been. They've been kind of okay.
If you have to make a choice, I'm not saying this because of the name Luke Jokel. I'm saying it's because of the position. If you have to make a choice, you'd rather lose guards than tackles or centers.
No doubt.
So that's where they're at. They have to plug a guard. In the NFL, you're supposed to be able to plug a guard if you're getting quality play at tackle and center.
A lot of questions on the offensive side. We talked about, Blake, that offensive line. The defense has been a really pleasant surprise, I think, to this point in the season. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. We got this date in football history, the Honda Drive around the NFL coming up as well. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Today. John Osher, the senior writer for Jaguars.com, alongside myself, Fat Tony. We'll get into this date and the Honda Drive next as we continue along on a Monday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history, it is October 10th, 2016. In 1921, on October 10th, the Decatur Staleys played their first game as the Chicago Staleys, eventually changing their nickname to the Bears in 1922. In 1994, the New York Giants retired Lawrence Taylor's number 56 up there at the Meadowlands during a game. A couple notable birthdays on this date. Brett Favre, 47 years old today, inducted into the Pro Hall of Fame earlier this year. Brett.
Coming back?
No.
Oh.
No tease of the comeback either, despite the fact that Cleveland may want him at this point.
Sure.
Considering they went to Charlie Whitehurst in yesterday's game. I think he's the fifth guy that has taken snaps at quarterback this year for the Browns.
Yeah.
But I don't think Brett's coming back even for the Cleveland Browns.
Three quarterbacks for the Browns yesterday in a two-minute span took snaps. Three quarterbacks.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's where Browns football is
sure.
right now. Believe, baby. At least the Cavaliers won a championship with LeBron James.
LeBron.
You got
LeBron
that to fall back on. And the Cleveland Indians are up 2-0 in their American League Division Series against the Boston Red Sox. So there's still some good sports going on in Cleveland. It's just not on the football field.
Well, they're in a long rebuild, and we'll see.
Yeah. Brett Favre, by the way, was my first ever favorite player in the NFL. It tells you how young I am.
Yep.
And even how long in my life it took me to really get into football.
Here's how old I am. When I worked at the TU, I had a Favre Heisman poster.
For real?
Southern Miss sent him out. I think it was the year they came here and beat
Were you a voter?
FSU. No, but at the time, that was a huge...
They were just canvassing?
Yeah, they sent Heisman posters, Heisman bowling. Like, that was a big deal. And Favre, Southern Miss sent him out.
Yeah.
Right, Southern Miss, right?
Southern Miss.
So I had one for a while. Wish I'd kept it.
Ryan Matthews, the running back up there in Philadelphia now, 29 years old today. Originally a first-round pick of the San Diego Chargers in 2010, an oft-injured running back who has shown flashes in the NFL but never really been able to get over that hump. But a first-round pick nonetheless. And a little bit more local here, actually very local, Paul Posluszny. Happy birthday to Paul at 32 years old. Spent the first four seasons of his career in Buffalo. Signed as a free agent with the Jags in 2011. A Pro Bowler in a Jaguars uniform in 2013. Second on the Jaguars' all-time tackles list, just 65 tackles behind Darryl Smith to take the lead in that stat, which is probably something he's going to get if he stays healthy over the last three quarters of this season. He's also 20th on the franchise's all-time sacks list with 11.5 sacks in a Jaguars uniform, one of just 23 players in franchise history with 10-plus sacks for the Jags.
Yeah, and the other day, right before the hurricane, there's this tweet about Paz helping put shingles on the side of his neighbors. He's too good. He's too nice. I'm down on that. I can't relate.
Too nice.
Too nice.
He's too nice.
Yeah, I mean, I can't stomach it after
too
a while.
Too good a guy.
Yeah.
We got too many good guys in Jaguars uniforms.
Yeah. It's so not something I would do. I just can't relate.
That's pretty funny. But happy birthday to Paz. 32 years old today, so you can send him your greetings on whatever social media he's on. Is he on Twitter?
I'm sure everybody loves him. Yeah.
I don't even know if he's on Twitter.
No.
He doesn't strike me as a Twitter guy.
No.
So, happy birthday to Paul Posluszny, 32 years old, the Mike for the Jacksonville Jaguars, at least for 2016. We'll see what it looks like in 2017 and beyond. And that is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Well, some breaking news this morning, guys. The Baltimore Ravens have fired offensive coordinator Mark Trestman after just 10 points and 188 passing yards for Joe Flacco against the Redskins yesterday. Trestman will be reportedly replaced by Marty Morningweg, and Trestman's former college or director of college scouting, Greg Gabriel, who's with the Bears multiple years, a couple years ago in Chicago, wasn't afraid to take shots at Trestman this morning, commenting about the firing of his former boss on Twitter, saying, quote, "That was bound to happen the day he was hired. Just an awful football coach." So
that's pretty funny. I will say, look, it worked for the Buffalo Bills. The week after they fired their offensive coordinator, they went and shut out New England. They won this weekend on the West Coast. So they're 2-0 since they changed offensive coordinators. Baltimore was 3-0. They're a 3-2 football team that is changing coaches in the middle of the season.
Yeah, that's what the league's doing.
Just a weird story there.
Washington owner Dan Snyder is sending Haiti natives Pierre Garcon and Ricky John Francois to their home countries to give assistance after Hurricane Matthew devastated the country last week. The number of fatalities is at 1,000 and rising as of this morning. Snyder also sent a plane of supplies to the Bahamas, so a good move there by Dan Snyder. Moving on to a lighter note, big season debut for Tom Brady, over 400 yards and 3 touchdowns against the Browns yesterday. This morning on WEEI in Boston, Brady said, "I feel better now at 39 than I did when I was 29. So that's not a good news for the rest of the league there, guys, as the Pats
He's
host the Bengals on Sunday at 1.
He doesn't feel better at 39 than he did at 29. Brady's just really good and has been for a very long time in this league.
A couple more stories. You got a long Honda driver on the NFL today, guys. The big win for Cowboys rookie quarterback Dak Prescott over the Bengals, 28-14 in Jerry's world. And Jerry was asked about a possible controversy at quarterback, and he was not having it last night and replied, "Tony is our number one quarterback. Dallas improves to 4-1 with Sunday's win over the Bengals, and Dak has now gone 155 passing attempts without an interception and needs 8 more to break Tom Brady's NFL record for the most consecutive passes without an interception to start a career." And
yeah, it's pretty good stuff.
A strange story, guys, coming out of last night's Packers and Giants game involving Giants second-year guard and 2015 first-round draft pick Eric Flowers. ESPN writer Jordan Rannon, I believe, approached his locker to grab some quotes, as he normally does. And as he got there, Flowers repeatedly said to him, "Get out of my face, get the bleep out of my face." And according to Dan Dugan of NJ.com, Flowers then pushed Rannon. And after Rannon replied multiple times, "I'm just trying to do my job," and then Flowers just straight up pushed the ESPN reporter in front of multiple media members.
Yeah, I saw Rannon.
Can't do that.
Yeah, I saw Rannon this morning and said it's not a big deal. Like, he's not looking to make anything out of it. But
smart
still,
move.
That's a difficult situation for the reporter to be in the locker room where a player's that kind of upset with.
Yeah, that's the right way to handle it. But can't do that.
Two more stories here in the Honda Drive around the NFL. Miami Dolphins rookie offensive lineman Laremy Tunsil was inactive Sunday due to an ankle injury that occurred while Tunsil slipped while getting out of the shower. Tunsil's ankle swelled up badly enough, and he was held out of the Titans' loss to the Titans 30-17 last night. And one final story here. Antonio Brown was forced to remove his cleats that were worn in tribute to Muhammad Ali yesterday against the Jets. The NFL has strict guidelines and rarely lets athletes wear anything outside of the team's uniform. Well, except for last week when he was allowed to wear cleats that paid tribute to the late, great Arnold Palmer. So, yeah, you could wear cleats paying tribute to Arnold Palmer, but not Muhammad Ali, apparently.
Look, that story, the NFL, some of the stuff it does is just ridiculous to me. One, I didn't even realize that Antonio Brown wore Arnold Palmer cleats last week until I saw the story about them not letting him wear the Muhammad Ali tweets. Look, nobody would even know what Antonio Brown was wearing if the NFL didn't make a big deal about it on a week-to-week basis. Who cares what's on his shoes if it's not offensive? A tribute to Muhammad Ali is not an offensive thing.
You're almost
better
off getting them banned because they get more publicity than if they don't.
If he didn't remove the Muhammad Ali cleats, he would have been ejected from yesterday's game. That's incredible.
That's so stupid. I mean, some of the stuff the NFL does is just stupid. I saw the rule came out yesterday. I need to go talk to Chris and some of the guys over there with the social media department here.
Right.
But they put up the rule yesterday that basically you can't post any video from inside the stadium, any original video from inside the stadium on game days.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to encourage fans to stay home and still be able to experience anything that the fans of the stadium are experiencing.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one.
Yeah. The NFL, man. NFL, they're trying to... Apparently, they think the reason that people don't go to football games is because the team's Twitter puts out a video from inside the stadium. That's the reason they're staying home.
Well, smartphones. Can't. Nobody takes phones to the game.
That's so dumb. So dumb. But that's the NFL from time to time. Yeah. They just make those kind of decisions.
That one's a little sketchy.
It is. And I want to talk to the guys over there in that department to see how they feel about it. Like, you can still post highlights, right? So when your team scores a touchdown, if you pull, like, the CBS highlight, that's fine to post. But you can't post, like, some kind of hype video from inside the stadium. Like, they couldn't post any of, like, the prowl of the Jaguars walking into the stadium, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I guess to encourage fans, if they want to experience those things, that you have to be at the game in order to experience them. But it doesn't make much sense to me.
We're in a brave new digital world, and sometimes people don't understand how it really works.
No doubt about it. One last thing about the Jaguars offense I wanted to get to before we switch over gears here to the Jags defense and what they've done through the first month. It felt like to me, when we talk about the running game, obviously Chris Ivory not available for the first several games, came back against Baltimore, didn't look like the same guy in that game, and then was a little bit better against the Colts, but still didn't look like the guy that we saw with the Jets the last couple of years, and certainly not as sharp as he looked in the preseason. It feels like the bye week came at a perfect time for that guy to get back to being Chris Ivory
I wrote after the game that he showed why they signed him, and what I meant by that was, for a few series in that game, you saw what I think they envisioned as the two-headed running back, able to give you a sort of the double dose and different looks. I definitely think that as the run blocking gets better, he should get better behind it because of his ability to take a 3-yard gain and his power turn into a 5-yard gain. I don't think he's a guy that necessarily is going to excel. If the run blocking is not giving you very much, he's not going to create very much on his own. But he certainly gets the most out of a run, and his power should be able to wear defenses down. Certainly, you would expect him to come back and in week 6 be more like the back they envisioned.
All right, let's get back onto the phone lines real quick. 641-1010 if you want to get involved with actually, Jesse was on there, but he fell off. So,
ow.
Jesse, call back.
Hope he's okay.
If you want to get involved with the show. We'll get into the defense here in just a moment. I know for me, at least, it's probably been the most pleasant surprise. I expected it to be pretty good, especially the second half of this season. I think the growth that we've seen, especially from the young pass rushers through the first month of the season, is surprising even me.
Yep.
Some of the plays that those guys have been able to make. But we'll talk about the defense as a whole. A lot of those young pieces coming together a lot earlier than I think anyone could have reasonably expected them to as they get ready for the second quarter this season. Again, especially for these first-year guys, this is a long time to play now. You got through the first 4 weeks of the season. That week 5 bye means that it's going to be 12 weeks in a row for these guys to have to go out and get ready for an NFL game. So it's a long time for these guys, and it's going to be a grind, especially for the young guys, to get through it, and trying to learn how to get through a 16-game schedule becomes that much tougher when you're having to do the last 12 games at the same time. But we'll talk about where the defense stands right now, some of the guys that have stood out for the Jags, at least to this point in the season. As we continue along, it is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Today. John Osher, senior writer for Jaguars.com, alongside myself, Fat Tony, Mike Dempsey with the day off. He'll be back tomorrow here with us on the program. We'll get into the Jaguars defense and some of the standouts on that side of the ball as we continue along on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Today from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Studios at Everbank Field.
This is Alan Hearn, and you are listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Rolling along here on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey out. He'll be back tomorrow, just taking a vacation day. He's fine over there in St. Augustine.
Unbelievable.
John Osher alongside. I'm Fat Tony. Joe Fortunato just came in here and basically wound me up and watched me go. When it comes to my least favorite rule in sports, and it has nothing to do with football.
Right.
It's that darn designated hitter with the Major League Baseball playoffs getting started this weekend. There is no bigger Cleveland fan in the world than one Fat Tony. because I'm ready for David Ortiz's career to end, and I'm happy to be the hater among all sports fans.
Why, because he's a DH?
Yeah, he's like the poster boy for the designated hitter and has been for a decade. And it's
pretty good, though, right?
He's been a darn good hitter.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. He's been a darn good hitter throughout his Major League Baseball career. But they're down 2-0. This isn't a baseball show, so I'm not going to delve into it too deep. Let's get back into the Jags and talk a little bit about the defense. We knew there was going to be a bunch of new faces, a lot of really young guys that they'd be relying on, especially at that Leo position. The pass rush from this team was going to have to come from guys that Dante Fowler was technically in his second year in the league, but really playing his first NFL football. Mm-hmm. And Unique Ngakoue, obviously a rookie this year. And to this point, at least to the first four games of the season, I think you've seen it get better on a weekly basis to this point. And they clearly played their best game against Indianapolis.
Well, I think the good news on those fronts is I don't think Fowler really even knows what he's doing yet, meaning pass rush technique, film study, all the things that we talked about during the preseason that he's learning. I don't think he's even close to scratching the surface with that, and yet he's still finding a way to make an impact.
Yeah, as Jeff Loggeman says, he doesn't look like a pass rusher with a plan at this point.
Right.
It's just athletic ability allowing him to be in position.
Which makes sense. I mean, when I say that, that's very common for rookie pass rushers. What's uncommon is to have a guy like Ngakoue who seems to really know what he's doing, has some polish to him, but even he, they're working on other moves with him. Even he has potential to get so much better. To me, it's highly unusual to have two first-year players who are able to impact the game the way they do. The really good news is history tells you that if they're doing this now, then they've got a real chance to be high, high impact guys. And I'm talking impact guys who bring the rest of the defense and the rest of the team along with them. I don't think that happens this weekend. I'm talking over the course of 2 or 3 years. If they're playing at this level now, and some of the young guys are playing at this level now, then what we talked about with this defense possibly being elite in a year has a real chance to do it, because when you get two pass rushers this young who are able to make an impact before they really know what they're doing, that's rare. And that's something that this franchise hasn't had at that position maybe ever, but I'm talking about the defense as something that looks like it's going to be able to be relied on and move to an elite level at some point. I don't know if elite happens this year, but it looks like it's going to happen. That's something to hang your hat on.
Want to talk about the secondary, too, and especially Jalen Ramsey being, you know, just unbelievable through his first four games. We had a caller on the line, though, wants to talk a little bit about another member of the secondary, Justin, up in Atlanta, dialed us up at 641-1010. What's going on today, Justin?
Hey, man, not much, guys. You doing okay?
We're good.
Good. There's a couple things I was going to talk about. First of all, Josh Johnson, man. You know, I said from the beginning, like during training camp, I thought that guy was doing a phenomenal job. And when I watched that last play, that game-saving fourth down play that he made, his instinct and awareness is incredible. And I think it's really underrated. I don't think people notice it as much as they probably should. That being said, you guys, what's the deal as far as seeing how Colvin's coming back? They haven't made any moves yet to cut anybody like a Grotz or somebody like that, have they? And then And the second thing was, you know, Pete Prisco has kind of said from the beginning, talking about Blake Bortles' throwing motion, and I think he's dead on with what he's saying. I watched him pretty closely, too, and if you watch him, man, he's winding up like he's a baseball player getting ready to throw out there. And I think a lot of that has to do – I think his confidence, for some reason, is really, really low. I'm not sure if he's got too much pressure on him because he doesn't want to throw a pick or whatever, but I think that Ole needs to roll him out more than what he already does during the game, because when he rolls out, he don't think, he just goes out there and throws. And I think that'll help get his confidence back, and I just wanted to see what you guys thought, and I'll take it off here.
Appreciate it, Justin. Look, I think that's something we talked about a little bit, is the idea of maybe making it a little more simple for Blake Bortles at this point in time. Going into this season, we talked about that next progression from Blake was going to be that ability to kind of see where the play needs to go before the snap. And unfortunately, through the first month of the season, it's looked like he's been fooled at times with what he's seen defensively from these other teams. And when he hasn't been fooled for large portions of games, he's looked pretty tentative with the decisions that he's making. And it's cost him throwing some interceptions.
That's a fair assessment. I think you will see them try to do things to roll him out. What you can't do, and what's really hard when you do it, you can't do it all the time, because if you do it all the time, then that means all of your pass plays are happening in situations where you're taking away sides of the field. It's tough to be successful if that's all you're doing.
Yeah.
Because if defenses know you're doing it, you become much, much easier to defend. But you can certainly have situations where you do that if you don't do it so much the defense knows you're doing it. So I think you have to limit the number of times you do it. But I do think they will have that be a part of what they do, because it's been effective when he does it.
And it seems to be a more effective strategy when you're able to run the ball a little bit and try to get some flow to the defense going after the run. And honestly, that's just not something they did a whole lot of.
I think that will be
games.
The intriguing storyline for the offense going forward. We saw it against the Colts. It was a different looking type offense. It was effective. How much of that personality and that approach can they take, incorporate it, and be how they play? Do they have a situation where they do that early and get defenses thinking about it and then drop them back? I think the personality of this offense and how it starts to look a little more like what it did against the Colts will be interesting to watch going forward.
I know they got the week-long roster exemption basically for Colvin last week, so they could bring him up to the active roster and not have to make a corresponding move on the 53 that should be coming, my guess is, today or tomorrow.
Yeah, I would think
whatever
so.
The announcement is going to be, we all kind of expect it to be Dwayne Grotz.
I would expect so.
But we don't know for sure yet.
You know, if it is, Josh Johnson has earned that. Played in the CFL. Josh Johnson just looks like an instinctive football player who is playing and reacting to what's going on out there. And he's made some plays. He deserves to be on the roster.
And the question becomes, okay, Colvin's coming back this week against Chicago. Amukamara's been really good when he's been on the field. Jalen Ramsey has been fantastic to this point through the first four games of his career. Devon House has been a bit of a disappointment.
Struggled
through the first month of the season. So you know Colvin's coming back, so you would assume, I at least assume, that Colvin's probably going to be the nickel, and that Ramsey's going to move to the outside on those snaps, and that Amukamara would be across from him. The questions about what they do with snaps for a guy like Devon House versus Josh Johnson, I'm curious to see how they handle it.
I don't necessarily know that they will do what you just said right out of the gate. I think you want to see where Colvin is.
Work him up a
little
bit,
make sure that he's physically ready, make sure that there's make sure that he's ready to do it. But I certainly think that at some point very quickly, you will see Amukamara and Ramsey starting with Colvin at the nickel. And then I wouldn't be surprised at some point in the season if you see Colvin starting. I don't think it's going to happen immediately, but he was playing at a level high enough in preseason where he may play well enough that you have to consider that. And then you have a scenario where one of them go to nickel and Amukamara is in on passing situations, which basically means you're a starter anyway.
Sure.
So I think definitely those three, very sooner rather than later, will be your three defensive backs who are playing in nickel situations, which basically means you're three starters in this league.
So you're saying that maybe not now necessarily, but in the future when Colvin gets back into the flow of whatever's going on, that it would be Amukamara coming off the field for Colvin and Ramsey to be on the field together.
I'm not saying that's a done thing. I don't think they're leaning toward that. But the way Colvin played in the preseason, he could play well enough to force that issue.
Gotcha.
Where they just say, hey, Colvin and Ramsey are our two best corners. The good news is Amukamara and Colvin are both playing or were playing in preseason at such a high level where you weren't sure which the better option would be. That's great.
Yeah, that's really good.
And again, House has certainly struggled at times during the first four games. But if you're in a situation where House is your fourth corner,
it's not bad.
You're in a good situation.
Yeah, that's not bad. And I think the other question that I get a lot from fans is, and I think it's a fair one given the way that Ramsey has played to this point through the first four games of his career, is at what point does he kind of become the guy who follows the guy on the other team?
Oh, I think pretty soon.
Yeah.
I, I think you want to be cautious. You know, one thing I know that they didn't like early on in this regime was situations where you had to ask even talented rookies to do too much and to give them too much too fast. So you don't want to do that. You want to make sure that they can handle and get the confidence and be playing at a high level before you start asking them to do more things. So I think there is a natural tendency. Look, Jalen's fine. He's playing very, very well. We're not going to have him follow guy all over the field yet. But the, I didn't want to say learning curve, but this guy's ability to take things and play at an extremely high level and sort of be so much more advanced than your normal rookie at everything they've asked him to do, I don't think it's very far off from where you have to say, look, this guy's your best player. If you're playing Alshon Jeffries, then you're going to put this guy on the best receiver across the ball. I think we're staring at that very, very quickly.
I do too, and I think
because why not?
Yeah, I mean, and the questions about he's such a big physical guy, right? And the questions that maybe people had was, could he keep track with those little quick twitch guys, which they've seen a lot of,
right?
And the first month of the season, and he's done very well in that capacity as well. So it makes you feel like, really, it's not a matchup issue for Ramsey. It's a whenever they feel comfortable putting him in that position and basically saying, take it.
I know there's at least one person in the building who's very sure Jalen Ramsey could handle that, and that's Jalen Ramsey.
I'm pretty sure Jalen Ramsey thinks he can handle whatever they happen to want to
which throw I say at. Is an incredible pot. I mean, you know, everything that you want out of a foundation core superstar-type player – this guy looks like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been a long time since this franchise has had an absolute meteoric superstar. He has that look and hasn't done anything to make you think he's not going to be that.
No doubt. There's no doubt about that. The linebacker position, Puz has been really solid to this point in the season, even good.
Mm-hmm.
And Telvin Smith, with the conversation.
I love how you say it, even good.
Even
like
good.
Like, it'd be a shock that Puz is good.
No, I'm not all that surprised. But I think late in the preseason, when Miles Shack got the start at that weak side spot, and everybody, including me, was wondering if that was a message to Telvin Smith about that position maybe being up in the air. Telvin may have been the best player on this defense in the first month.
If it wasn't a message, it was no secret that when this team says we're challenging somebody to do something, which was said about Telvin Smith, we're challenging to be more consistent, that means, hey, you need to play better. And there were situations that Telvin Smith had mental errors on the field. And they wanted that to not be the case. He has played exceptionally well. I asked Poslesny the other day, who's playing best on the defense? And he's in the locker right next door to him. And he kind of pointed his thumb at Telvin and said, hey, this guy is playing an extreme. I'm not sure if I said who's playing the best, but I said, hey, tell me about Telvin. He goes, he is playing off the charts. And the speed that he plays with, the things that he's doing, the guy looks like a third-year player who is putting it all together and is starting to see everything that he can be, speed, all the things you thought he could be, he is showing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he felt pressure from Miles Jack. I don't know if that competition helped him.
But if it did, it worked.
But whatever it is, he's playing like the best player on the defense.
No doubt about it. And Miles obviously got on the field for the first time, significant snaps against Indianapolis, and all indications are that he looked pretty comfortable playing that auto spot, which I think a lot of people were wondering how comfortable he would look at that strong side spot. But looked comfortable, and it seems like that's probably going to be his role for now on this defense, and maybe it expands where he's getting some snaps at the mic and nickel, but we'll see.
They haven't said he's starting at auto yet. But
they should. They ought to just say it.
They haven't said he's not.
Yeah, they ought to just say it. That ought to be something that Gus Bradley says today. That,
we'll see.
That
about,
Miles Jack
what,
is the
25
auto.
Minutes.
Yeah, he'll be talking here in just a bit. I know we got to let you run, right?
I'm actually good. Gus isn't going until noon, so
okay.
I can stick around for 10 minutes.
Okay.
Sure.
Because I do want to ask you about, you know, they got the game against Chicago coming off the bye this week, and just how big a game this is for this Jaguars team.
Very.
We also got the fan feedback spotlight to get into today as well. The question of the day today, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, predict the Jags record over the next four games. And who do you think they'll beat? They're at Chicago, home against Oakland, at Tennessee, and then at Kansas City over the course of the next month of the season. So we'll get to some of your answers to that on the other side as well. John Osher, Fat Tony here with you. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
A visit to the Chicago Bears is up next for the Jaguars. Brian Hoyer nearly led a two-minute drive comeback but could not convert on fourth down inside Colts territory. Colts beat the Bears 29-23 yesterday at Indianapolis. Colts improved to 2-3, while the Bears fall to 1-4. Rookie running back Jordan Howard had a great day, 163 yards of total offense and a touchdown. The Bears were led in receiving by Cameron Meredith, who opened the year sixth on the Bears' depth chart. Nine catches on 12 targets for 130 yards and a score. Jaguars Monday on the air, 6 to 8 p.m. tonight. And also happy birthdays to Paul Posluszny and Tony Khan. This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Tyler Devitt.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday, just about to put a bow on this one. Mike Dempsey out. He'll be back with us tomorrow. John Osher alongside, the senior writer for Jaguars.com.
When's the last time Mike worked? Like September?
Thursday.
Okay, well.
Yeah, we were all in on Thursday.
So I'll say September.
Yeah, it was a weird day.
All right, yeah.
It was a weird day kind of before the storm got here and trying to figure out all that stuff.
It was the calm before the storm.
Yeah. And we had had to push the fantasy show a day earlier, so we had a day less information. And by the time I got up yesterday morning, I was like, ooh. I was like, some of the things we had to say, I was like, ooh. I don't know how many people are really like concerned about tuning in for their fantasy football information, but this would have been the week to skip it. Just with the lack of information we wound up having by just having to do the show on Thursday as opposed to Friday. We'll be back to the regular schedule on Friday this week. The Jags this weekend back to regular season football. They'll be up at Chicago taking on the Bears on Sunday. And we talked about it going into the Baltimore game. It's a must-win game for this team. They got to find a way. It's the biggest game in the Bradley era. And then when they lose that game, the Colts game becomes this must-win game, and it's the biggest game in the Bradley era. And I don't know that the Chicago game is the biggest game in the Bradley era. I think it's a big game if they're going to reach the aspirations that it felt like this football team had a month ago going into the season. They need to find a way to beat the Chicago Bears, get to 2-3, and try to get some kind of momentum going in the 2016 season.
Well, you know, it goes without saying, if you beat the Bears, then you've got Oakland coming in and a home game with a chance to get your head back above water. And that's what you sign on for when you start 0-3. You sign on for a bunch of games that, hey, if you're going to get back into this thing, you need to win. They missed the Baltimore game. Otherwise, you're 2-2. And this game isn't nearly as much of a must-win if you're 2-2. But you're playing the Bears. It's a one-win team. On paper, it's a team that you ought to be able to go contend with. And the difficult thing is it's on the road. You haven't played well on the road. But it's another one of these games that if you're going to keep saying that you're better, if you're going to keep saying that you're getting there, if you're going to keep saying, yeah, we can contend, we feel like we can get this season back together, if you're going to say all those things, then you've got to go win games.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a game that you ought to go win if you're going to be that team that you keep talking about. So, yeah, it's big.
I agree with you. I think it's really big for a team. Again, for me, it's about they can still have those expectations in that locker room.
Sure.
I get that a lot of fans have kind of given up on this team meeting whatever expectations they had before the season. That doesn't mean the 53 guys in there have or should. And this weekend is an opportunity for them to get those kind of things back on track. If you fall to 1-4, now it's really almost impossible.
Right. And if they're, you know, if the defense is the defense that it has shown the last six quarters, second half of the Baltimore game, Indianapolis, and if the offense can be functional and turnover free, then the next few games are games that you ought to be able to go win, compete, do all the things we're talking about. they're not insurmountable. You know, there's a couple down the road where you're playing Denver, Minnesota in December that I think no matter where you play them are going to be extremely difficult tasks because they're teams that clearly know their identity. They're playing at a high level. They can go in anywhere. They're elite. The next few teams, I don't think, are at that point. So they are games that where this franchise is have a chance to go win if you are what you keep saying you are. Mm-hmm. So you got to go win.
No doubt about it. Let's get one more call in here before we get to the fan feedback spotlight today. Jesse in Miami has called us back. What's going on, Jesse?
Yeah, hey. Thank you guys for taking me. Oh, man, been waiting a long time. Well, I just want to give two, and I get off the air and listen to what you guys think about and what you guys say. We were told that Marquise Lee take the top off the defense. He do this and he do that there. I mean, why are they not taking shots with him down the field, you know, to stress the field and whatever and, you know, get points on the board? And also, Jonathan Siffrin, I mean, I don't know why these defensive coordinators are not looking at he's been targeted. I'm glad that Devon House, I mean, you know, someone took his spot. I'm glad Prince Kamara was back. But Jonathan Siffrin is getting targeted just as well as Devon House. These guys could not cover. These guys giving up points. These guys is hurting our team. And I get out there and see what you guys think about it.
All right, Jesse, appreciate the call.
Well, they took one shot with Marquise. It was a Baltimore game, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it was there. I sort of agree. I'd like to see more to him. He's more involved in the offense on the intermediate routes. He's become something of a weapon where they don't have very many on those 7-8 yard passes because he can get separation and make it a very easy throw. And then his speed can turn the corner and turn into a first down. You would think that would become a little more a part of the offense. I also think, on a side note, Julius Thomas getting back this week. The intermediate stuff that worked early, a lot of it was to him. So it'll be interesting to see how, now that they're running a little better, showed some things against Indy, how they work Julius into that, what kind of a dimension it can give. As far as Sip, he's a strong safety. He's going to be on the field, and yeah, he's going to get targeted. But they're not going to take him off the field in passing situations right now. So he's got to get better.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we've been saying it for 4 years. Willie, I don't know. But answer your question, why can't they see it? I think they know he's going to get targeted. I don't think it's a mystery. I think it's just a matter of you try to take that away as much as you possibly can, but there's not really a strong safety alternative on the roster. So that's where
you're
at.
Not right now, no.
And in fairness to Sip, I think he's played okay in run situations for the most part, with the exception of the Eddie Lacy play. I don't think he's played as badly as people are sort of hammering him for.
He's a target.
But, yeah, in coverage, he's a target.
Yeah, and he's a target for the fan base, too.
Sure.
And coming into this year, you expect it,
yeah.
Right? I mean, him and Jokel and Myers are probably the three guys that lead that list of kind of the targets of the fan base. Coming into this season, and Joe
Myers may be kicking his way off of it.
Has been good,
yeah,
really good to this point in the season. And look, Jokel's not around for the rest of this year, so strap in, Sip.
It's a good for Sip. He gets it off. And I think there's been a couple of plays where he's got called for interference that were a little sketchy,
questionable.
So it's going to be a target. I think most teams' strong safeties are going to get targeted.
Probably.
Yeah.
And hopefully Sip plays well through the last 12 games of the season and kind of alleviates some of that. But we'll see. He gets an opportunity starting this week against Chicago. The Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question of the day today. Predict the Jaguars' record over the next 4 games, and who do you think they will beat? Some of the answers we got today on Twitter. Irish Jaguar 2-2 will beat Chicago and Tennessee. They're on the road, both games there. Andy 1-3 beat Chicago, lose to all the others, including Titans and Cons. Patience runs out. Probably not during the season, but okay. Chris, hate to say it, Tony, 1-3, we will beat the Titans. From Jags Movie Guy, 1-3, but we'll win all the tailgates. All right, from Mike, 0-4. Johnny, we can beat all of them, 4-0, a believer there. From Duval Doom, 2-2, feels like we'll steal Chicago and Tennessee, but by the end of the next 4, the season will be over. Yay. From a believer. He says, my answer is obvious from my Twitter name. Twitter name is 13-3 believer. So he thinks they're going to run
baby.
The table. And from Alvaro 4-0, how amazing would that be? That should be the norm after 4 years of embarrassing starts. So a little bit all over the place there. I only read the answers where they include the hashtag. And so you got, I think, a little bit more unbalanced as far as the answers than what I actually got, which was a whole lot of 1-3 or worse.
Right.
Is kind of the expectation from the fans right now. I think they go 2-2 in this span. I think if they're going to be legit contenders for a wild card spot, a playoff spot in the AFC South, I think 3-1 is probably what they need.
I agree. And I think under your scenario, you're talking about what we talked about earlier in the show, 2-2, and then you're sitting there after week 8, and you're just taking a big red pen and circling that Baltimore fourth quarter.
Yep.
Because then you'd be, you know, and we're way ahead of ourselves. Like, who knows what the record's going to be. But you're that 500 team that's fighting to figure out what you are, fighting to get better, fighting to get over the top, fighting to grow up. And at that point, wouldn't 4-4 look better than 3-5? Just like right now, wouldn't 2-2 look better than 1-3? You left one on the table, and you probably need to get to 3-1 over this next 4 weeks to feel like that's not haunting you anymore.
Yeah, and we'll see if they can get there. Certainly an opportunity against a Bears team that they're at least every bit as good as this weekend. And
they maybe, sure ought to be.
And we'll see. You know, we felt that way now for a while about this team. They wound up 1-3 through the first four. An opportunity this weekend against the Chicago team that you think that you're at least as good as, if you're Jacksonville from a roster perspective, go out there and make it count and try to win
and
one of
these big
games.
And you've got the Del Rio Bowl, right, after
and
that?
Del Rio, and I'm telling you, man, he's probably had that one circled since that schedule came out.
I guess, but there's so little that was pertinent left from when he was here that I want, you know, I guess he probably does. But
and he's a former player.
Right,
and
it's
I think
a different
there is
environment.
That player's mindset of,
yeah.
You know, players when they go to the team that let them go.
Sure.
You know, there is that extra bit of oomph. This is a coach that's going to the team that let him go.
Yeah.
And I certainly think that's going to be a factor, at least for him. And that's a Raiders team that's been winning some
sure.
really tight
yeah,
ball games.
They've looked good. Credit and to them.
Found a way at 4-1 now. They are tied with the Denver Broncos for the lead in the AFC West as we go into week 6 of the NFL season. So what do you got coming up this week, Johnny?
We will be getting back into the groove. You know, Ozone Video Mailbag tomorrow. Ozone's all week. And we'll be trying to set the tone for sort of what this team needs to do to you know, get that 3-1 mark over the next course of the month.
Hopefully we'll catch up with you again sometime this week.
Look forward to it.
You'll be on with Ryan O and Frank tomorrow night.
Absolutely.
At 6 o'clock, is that?
Yes.
6 o'clock hour tomorrow. Yes. Yeah, so
we'll be there.
We'll check that out tomorrow night as well and hopefully talk to you a little bit later on this week. So for Mike Dempsey, who's absent, he'll be back with us tomorrow.
We think.
John Osier, for myself, Fat Tony, for Joe Fortunato, for Tyler Devitt. That'll do it for us here on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday edition of Jaguars Today. Back with you tomorrow at 10 right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.
Mike Dempsey here for the delicious taste of Dandy Sandwiches and Subs. Dandy Foods, I'm always telling you about what a great option they are for lunch. They're a great option for anytime. Anytime you're hungry for food on the go, you don't want to waste your lunch hour sitting in a restaurant drive-thru. Are you kidding me? You head right to the Fresh Case or your Kangaroo Express or Circle K. You're going to be in there and out in about 2 minutes. The hardest thing is deciding which variety you're going to have. Maybe the three-meat trio, maybe the classic Cuban or the tuna salad, or any of the wonderful Anytime Deli line of sandwiches as well. They've got the new breakfast sliders. They've got the light lunchtime wraps. They've got something for everybody's palate. And the one thing they've got is consistency. Great flavors, fresh ingredients, wholesome food at a great price. It's a winning formula, and it's been a winning formula for over 6 decades. The Thompson family, a local bunch, started Dandy over 60 years ago, and they're going strong. So, folks, whenever you're hungry for food on the go, whatever time that happens to be, do what I do. I always tell you, go out and make yours a Dandy and do it today.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, this is Jaguars Today. Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars, Jacksonville Sharks, and Jacksonville University.